Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Luis Angel Reyes Salvalza, an immigration attorney himself undocumented and who was arrested for demanding the release of people in state prisons and immigration jails, calling the situation really alarming, rips the Democratic Party for 35 years of failed promises and now excluding a path to citizenship from the budget reconciliation bill and leaving 11 million undocumented immigrants at risk of deportation.
Undocumented families demand citizenship for all, says Luis Angel Reyes Salvaza. Thanks for joining us.
I want to begin with the issue of your own particular journey as an immigrant who is undocumented and how that informs your political positioning and the work that you do.
My case is in many ways not unique, but in other ways also exemplifies just how broken the immigration system is. I mean, it's broken when we look at it from a human rights perspective, but in many ways it's functioning precisely how the American government has structured the system. My personal story, like many immigrants, is that of forced migration. I came to the United States at the age of 8 from a small rural town in Culiacán, Sinaloa, Mexico, where my family, together with about 10 million campesinos between 1994 and 2006, were expelled from their lands and lost their lands and were forced to migrate because of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which had devastating consequences for the working class in America as well. And those millions of immigrants, like myself, came to the United States seeking a better future. And I've been living in San Jose, California, since I was about 8 years old. Living a life as an undocumented immigrant in America is become life or death. So it's come with a lot of hardships and obstacles and, quite honestly, persecution by both Democratic and Republican administrations. I come out of the big awakening that happened in the immigrant community in spring of 2006, where we saw historic mobilizations, unprecedented general strike that culminated on May 1st of 2006, at the time fighting against a Republican Congress, a Republican president, where they had the votes to enact this now infamously known Sensenbrenner Bill, H.R. 4437, which was going to further criminalize immigrants. And I witnessed myself and again, millions of people in my community come out of the shadows and take over the streets and shut down major economies from here in California all the way to New York, to Chicago, to Texas and Arizona. That has politically shaped my outlook, both in terms of what we face as immigrants in this country, the injustices, the persecution, but also the tremendous level of collective strength that exists in the immigrant community. And we're beginning to see that self-organization in the immigrant community be on the rise again. And we see it as immigrants are fighting for a pathway to citizenship, this time not against a Republican government, but against a Democratic administration that at this moment has excluded a pathway to citizenship from the latest legislation in Congress, the Build Back Better Act. So I very much come from that movement of 2006. I've since become a removal defense attorney. I went to law school because I have, I'm a DACA recipient. I'm able to exercise my law degree and represent people who are just like me, undocumented, and are facing family separation, deportations, and just horrific abuse in the process of detention, which is also another area where we're seeing immigrants increasingly self-organized. We saw tremendous hunger strikes spread across the U.S. immigrant detention system when the pandemic hit, and we're seeing that organizing continue to happen, asking for Biden to stop repopulating a lot of these detention centers where people were freed, in fact, under the Trump administration. And for example, Trump came into office, immigrant detention was at a 30-year low. 13,000 people were in immigrant detention because, again, a lot of people went on hunger strikes, a lot of lawsuits found that during the pandemic, detention was such a risk to human life that it was unconstitutional. And now the Biden administration has increased detention all the way up to about 27,000 people. That organizing inside those detention centers is also very dynamic, also very urgent, because obviously this pandemic is still happening. So
when you say forced migration, if you could expound a bit on, you referenced NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which now has been modified. I just really call it NAFTA 2. But talk a moment about that issue of forced migration and its relationship to
the very often policies of the U.S. government and the realities of climate change, just to help situate what the whole issues are in their root cause of forced migration.
This is a very critical part of the migration issue here in the United States, which is often ignored and at best given lip service, but it's the foreign policies of the U.S. government, both economic and military policies across the world, which displaces millions of people and creates refugees who are, again, see their home countries, their economic well-being, their sense of safety and security, and the increase of persecution come at the heels of these policies. And so to name a few, obviously I named already the North American Free Trade Agreement, to literally force the Mexican government, which was complicit in this, the ruling class in Mexico obviously gained a lot from this North American Free Trade Agreement. People like Carlos Slim became one of the richest men, and at one point was the richest man in the world, and benefited from this process. And so the ruling elites, both in the Mexican government and in the United States at that point under a Democrat, both the Republican administration, which was helping draft NAFTA and then implemented and enacted under the Clinton administration in 1994, it changed the Mexican Constitution, which said in Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution, which is a victory of the Mexican Revolution, said that land belonged to the people, there were collective estates called ejidos where workers could share and collectively run these plots of land. And obviously for NAFTA to work, you had to commodify land, and that land needed to be privatized. And it changed that article in the Mexican Constitution. The effects were just devastating. 10 million people between 1994 and 2006, mostly poor campesinos like my family, were displaced from the Mexican countryside. We saw similar things with CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement of 2002. Where again, the economies, these free trade zones that were created in El Salvador and in these places displaced hundreds of thousands of people who saw their economies destroyed, becoming pools of cheap labor, seeing austerity, enacted, the minor social safety net that existed in those countries were eliminated. Again, many, many people to flee. And we're seeing this currently right now with the effects of climate change, which U.S. corporations and are disproportionately responsible for the consequences of climate change, which are being borne not by people here in the United States, although there's instances of that as well, but mostly being felt in places like Central America, where there's huge droughts, for example, in Honduras. People can't sustain themselves and are being forced to flee. And for example, right now we have about 3,000 migrants in a caravan who are being repressed actually by the Mexican government because they're fleeing, again, these conditions of climate change and the terrible persecution. And to name one last example of the U.S. involvement in Central America, like there's no better example than the 2009 coup in Honduras, where a democratically elected president, Zelaya, was overthrown. Sorry, the Clintons and the Obama administration gave support to. And Honduras became one of the most violent countries in the world as a result of this coup. People, I think, in the United States need to really understand and realize that the bipartisan policies, both of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, when it comes to economic and military interventions, not just in Mexico and Central America, but across the world, are displacing millions and millions of people. And this is something that's not going to stop, especially as we're seeing the increasing effects of climate change around the world. Something to also keep in mind is that the U.S. government has been very aware that this displacement was going to happen. And so, for example, in 1994, when NAFTA was enacted, 2 years later, the current immigration system that we live under was enacted under the 1996 immigration laws. Illegal Immigration Reform Act and Responsibility Act of 1996 created programs that didn't exist before. It created, it expanded mandatory detention. It created, expanded expedited removal at the border. And it really militarized and created a detention machine so that it could deal with the millions of people that were going to be displaced from Mexico due to NAFTA. And we really saw those laws that were, again, implemented in 1996 by the Democratic administration, the Clinton administration, actually be put into effect. And the architect of that was the Obama administration in 2008, which at the time there was a huge economic crisis. Immigrants were scapegoated, and those anti-immigrant laws that were enacted in 1996 to deal with the influx of immigrants that was going to happen from the displacement of NAFTA was revved up, and Obama to this day remains the deporter-in-chief, as he's known in the immigrant community, where he separated nearly 3 million immigrant families, something that the Trump administration never even came close to doing. So This is an issue that I think the American public needs to be more aware of, especially when it comes to foreign policies, because it's creating tremendous havoc around the world. And the limitations we're seeing from this administration now at the border around, you know, refugee rights and asylum rights are at least the way that the U.S. government would like to deal with the problem that it's creating around the world. And I think for a lot of immigrants here in this country, and I think for a lot of Americans too, this is not a humane way to deal with this issue. And again, we're seeing a lot of organizing that now is beginning to confront not just the Republicans, but the Democrats on this issue, which is progress, because it was very difficult to fight this under the Obama administration because of its lip service to human rights and all of those things. So there's been lessons learned for sure.
Before we talk about the deportations and the detentions, we should start with the road to citizenship. Who gets legal status under this? And is that the same thing as citizenship? And how does one gain citizenship?
There's approximately 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States, again, due to these forced migrations. These are people who have been without a pathway to citizenship for over 35 years. The last immigration reform happened in 1986. This time lapse, right, 35 years of immigrants being against the backbone of the U.S. workforce, the cheap labor of the U.S. workforce during this time period, also at the same time paying billions of dollars in taxes. Undocumented immigrants pay every year about $120 billion in local, state, and federal taxes, about $79.7 billion just in federal taxes alone. To exemplify this a little bit more, Social Security program, immigrants pay about $17 billion into Social Security every single year, a program which will collapse if immigrants weren't paying into that federal program. And again, Social Security is something, and again, that immigrants are excluded from. They will never benefit from this program. Immigrants pay about $4 billion into Medicare. Billions of dollars are being paid into the federal government, local governments, and state governments. And meanwhile, immigrants are being excluded and from various social programs. But we saw it during the pandemic, not just under Trump, but also under Biden, who, when they were giving, you know, COVID relief, explicitly excluded undocumented immigrants. This is the context in which the fight for a pathway to citizenship is taking place. This is a fight that, again, has been 25 years in the making, and the Democratic Party has been making promises of immigration reform for 25 years. The same thing that happened with the Obama administration is happening currently right now with the Biden administration. Obama, in 2008, promised immigration reform within his first 100 days in office. Instead, we got almost 3 million deportations. The Biden administration similarly promised immigration reform within the first 100 days in office. And instead, what we're seeing is increased detention, increased deportations under Biden. And now, in the proposal that's coming out of Congress, has excluded a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants.
You're talking about the Democratic Party, which has excluded a path to citizenship from the budget reconciliation bill. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the budget reconciliation process is important because it allows the Democratic Party, with its simple majority in the Senate and the House of Representatives, to pass legislation without needing to get around the filibuster in the Senate, which has for a very long time has been the Democratic Party's excuse for not passing immigration reform, which obviously was a fake excuse even under Obama, because the Democrats had a supermajority at the time in the Senate and had a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, and they still didn't pass immigration reform. But even now, with this reconciliation process, the Democrats hold in their hand the power to pass legislation, and not just on immigration, but on a number of questions which have been discussed as part of the budget reconciliation bill or the Build Back Better Act. Let's remember that when the Build Back Better Act started, it was at $6 trillion, which is an investment over 10 years, a much needed investment in social services and to address climate change, better labor right protections, expanded Medicare and family leave and paid free community college, in addition to enacting a bill that would give immigrants a pathway to citizenship. And what we saw instead is that not only was this bill reduced now to $1.7 trillion over 10 years, which it's worth noting that during the same time, the Democrats authorized over $800 billion to the military budget, which over 10 years would be about $7 trillion, at the same time that they were telling not just immigrants, but working class people across the United States that they couldn't afford the Build Back Better Act, which again now is at $1.7 trillion over a period of 10 years and has most of the climate provisions and pro-working class provisions have been completely watered down. And this has been true when it comes to immigration. So the House of Representatives passed their version of the budget reconciliation bill. In that bill, the immigration provisions say the following. Instead of providing a pathway to citizenship, the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives, which is, again, where they have a much bigger majority, and this is where a lot of the quote-unquote progressive Democrats are in, their version of the bill, which is now pending before the Senate, which you can only imagine how much more that's going to get watered down. But what came out of the House of Representatives, instead of providing this pathway to citizenship, created what I see as a permanent second-class status for immigrants, a temporary parole in place, which doesn't provide permanent protections, doesn't provide lawful permanent status, it doesn't provide a pathway to citizenship. And what it does is provides people with work authorization, people who arrived in the United States before January of 2011, approximately about 6.7 of the 11 million people would qualify. So millions of people would be excluded from this. The people that would qualify would only be able to get work authorization for 5 years the first time, which they would then be able to renew once for another 5 years. And after 10 years, this program would expire. People who would have to give their information to the federal government after 10 years would have to face potentially a new administration, openly anti-immigrant administration, that would now have everybody's information and where these temporary protections would expire in 10 years' time. And so the immigrant community and immigrant organizers have categorically rejected this proposal and are mobilizing currently now demanding that the Democratic senators include a pathway to citizenship in the bill. What we're seeing from the Democratic Party is in the Senate is a deferral and a hiding behind the Senate parliamentarian who is unelected, who has so far, you know, advised because, she, you know, she the parliamentarian isn't elected, doesn't have any real decision-making authority, but gave her advisory opinion and rejected a pathway to citizenship in two occasions. And there's a current proposal pending before the Senate parliamentarian regarding this parole in place. And so it's possible that the parole in place may not even pass if the Senate parliamentarian rejects it, because so far senators like Senator Manchin have said that they would not override the Senate parliamentarian, which, again, we've seen, you know, with the fight to increase the minimum wage to $15. This is how the Democrats betrayed that demand, was they hid behind the Senate parliamentarian, who at the time said you can't include an increase in minimum wage in the budget reconciliation bill. So what came out of the House doesn't include a pathway to citizenship. There's demands for the Senate to include that back in. But from what we're hearing from the Democrats, it looks like even the parole in place may not pass.
Well, Luis, let me ask you this. We've looked at 35 years of failed promises from the Democratic Party, and now this exclusion of a path to citizenship from the budget reconciliation bill. What is the agenda that we should be following to take up these catastrophic issues, which clearly we can't rely on the Democratic Party to pursue?
I think that a lot of grassroots organizing, very visionary grassroots organizing, not just on the question of immigration, on every question, is really our only hope. I've seen a decline since the Trump administration left office in the media coverage of these issues. The policies themselves haven't actually changed all that much. In some cases, they've gotten worse. You mentioned the migrant protection protocols, I think better known as the Remain in Mexico policy, with the complicity of the judiciary branch, has not only been reenacted, this Trump policy has been reenacted under the Biden administration, but it has actually been expanded. You know, before, non-Spanish speakers were not included under the Remain in Mexico policy, but now it includes Haitians, and it's been expanded to include any nationality in the Western Hemisphere. This is just a way that really goes against our international commitments, and it goes against U.S. law that gives people the right to apply for asylum and to seek refuge in this country in a safe place. We've seen the Biden administration's willingness to expand this program, knowing that there's been thousands, over 5,000 reported cases, people who have been part of the Remain in Mexico program who have been in these encampments along the border where police have turned over some of these migrants to cartels and who have been subject to violence and persecution. The Biden administration is expanding this. It's incredibly shameful, and I think for the progressive community, we should be outraged and we should be in the streets just like we were in the streets under the Trump administration. We should learn the lessons from the Obama administration that just because a Democrat is sitting in office, that an injustice under a Democrat is an injustice just as much as when a Republican is in office. And so we really need to see mobilizations again against the human rights violations that are taking place at the border. We need to see mobilizations against detention centers, which again, under the Trump administration, really ironically, because of the pandemic and because of the self-organizing that was happening inside these facilities where immigrants went on hunger strikes and labor strikes in largely for-profit detention centers are making record profits off of the back of immigrants, which is a modern detention system. It didn't exist before in this way. People kind of also forget that immigrant detention is civil and it's not supposed to result in people being detained and caged. And under the Obama administration, we saw the expansion of immigrant detention, the passage of mandatory quotas for detention, 34,000 beds in 2009 under a Democratic Congress, and the Obama administration reaching about 50,000 people in detention. And when Biden came into office, there was 13,000 people. So right now the question, I think, for progressives in this country and for immigrants in this country is, going to allow us to go back to mass detention, mass deportation, or are we going to create a system that's free of detention and that respects people's rights to apply for refuge and to seek asylum in this country? That's the question, I think, for the progressive community. And I think many have learned the lessons from the Obama years, but I agree with you that it's not at the level that it was under the Trump administration. And so we really need to make sure that just the fact that Biden is in office, you know, that we don't put our guard down, because again, the injustices are continuing to happen. Just because they're not in the media every day doesn't mean they're not happening. So I really appreciate this interview for that reason as well, because it's really awful what's taking place.
What accounts for the increase in the detentions and the deportations now?
The Biden administration really had a choice. The choice was, are we going to continue to depopulate these detention centers where horrific abuses have happened? I mean, in the reported cases in Georgia of women who were forcibly sterilized, there were deaths that have been happening unprecedented even before the pandemic that have been happening in immigrant detention. So the question really was, are we going to move away from this inhumane system, allowing people to pursue their cases in freedom in their communities? There's no reason for someone whose papers aren't in order to be subject to immigrant detention. The only reason it really exists, and let's just be honest, is that it's a billion-dollar industry. You know, the vast majority of immigrants detained detention are in for-profit detention centers run by Corrections Corporation of America or GEO Group, and they keep changing their names and these PR stunts, but it's the same companies making billions and billions of dollars. The sign that the Biden administration was going to take the wrong step in this was made clear when the Biden administration excluded immigrant detention from its federal ban on for-profit prisons. So that moment when the federal administration decided to exclude the immigration system, it sent a very clear message that the Biden administration was going to continue to prioritize the interests of these corporations who are making, again, billions of dollars off of detaining immigrants. Instead of immigrant detention going down, immigrant detention has now increased, despite the lip service and despite the new policies which have, you know, around, you know, enforcement priorities, which have mostly been cosmetic changes. We've seen cosmetic changes when it comes to the migration, the remain in Mexico policy, but these are purely superficial changes. The results are there for everybody to see. Again, my immigrant detention was at a 30-year low. 13,000 immigrants were in detention when Biden came into office, and now there's 27,000. And it's looking like that number is going to continue to increase. And I'll just highlight here in California, for example, because, again, the heroic, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, I mean, people in detention, the fact that they're willing to organize and they're willing to go on hunger strikes and put their lives at risk like this when they're completely being repressed and retaliated against by the guards and by the ICE officials that have complete control over their bodies is something that needs to be covered more by the media about what's going on in these facilities. Because the way that the Obama administration was able to deport so many people is by keeping it hidden. There were these midnight raids. Obama was so good at arresting people at 5, 6 in the morning. No one saw it happen. People just disappeared overnight, lost into this detention system and deported en masse. We're beginning to see that start to happen with the Biden administration as well, increasing the deportations against Haitian immigrants, right? The disproportionate deportation of Black immigrants in particular under the Biden administration is tremendously concerning. We need to be aware that this is taking place. When you ask me why is the Biden administration doing this, the only reason and only explanation I can give is that the Democratic Party is deciding to put profits over human lives, because there is no reasonable explanation for why we would go back to mass detention after the horrific experiences that were publicly exposed under Trump, but that had existed since the Obama and Bush administrations.
Shed its tears, and there's roughly 56 immigrants that were just killed in their way to Mexico to find a path to the United States. Aside from a big, grotesque, terrifying picture of an overturned tractor trailer that housed them in the paper, we have not been there to really rally in support of and really begin to declare that we do not believe in the borders and contest the whole issue of papers when and really raise up the what creates the mass migration. I really thank you for your work.
I share your frustrations, and I like to stay optimistic because it's really hard to do this work if you don't stay optimistic.
Luis Angel Reyes de Valza, we, along with you, say undocumented families demand citizenship for all. Thank you for the work you do.
He's turning mothers against daughters, fathers against sons, nation against nation, thrive on the evil that's done. It's a sign of the times. You can see it on the faces of people everywhere. You can see them on the streets. You can hear it on the news. Lord, I do believe there's a devil on the loose.
Mavis Staples, yeah, there's a devil on the loose.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.